And now, get ready, folks. It's time for Banter with Bob Sherwood and Dan Snell. Banter. And now, here's Bob and Dan.
Hey, guys and gals. So here we are. I guess it's Wednesday, April the 2nd. Two big things on my mind, maybe three things, plus whatever my friend Dan has to say. But one is, and I hope I'm getting this right, go to your map and look for Holly, Louisiana. Maybe Dan, while I'm mentioning this, you could Google it to make sure I got the right city. Holly, Louisiana is just west of Dallas. No, excuse me, east of Dallas. Population, I don't know, 4,000 or 5,000 people. That's where the $500 million or billion-dollar Meta data center is going in right now. That's the one they're building the power plants for. The average projected salary at the data center is like $85,000. The current total family income in Louisiana for family is like 50.
This is Holly Ridge.
Holly Ridge, that's what it is. Holly Ridge.
Holly Ridge.
And so it's a big deal. I mean, it's huge because it's going to draw like 20% of all the power in that area is going to come into this plant, and they're putting in new gas-fired power plants. And but anyway, it's like I said, 5 million square feet. It's going to be massive.
Yeah, well, that's huge. Now, speaking of massive, let's talk about tariffs here right behind me, live breaking news behind me.
Yeah.
Let's just tune in. You want to listen into this for a second?
Sure. Turn it in for a second. Yeah. I can't hear it, so turn it up a bit.
I'll turn it up. Scavengers. Can you hear it now?
A little better. It's kind of cutting out.
You dream that you don't hear so much about. You did.
Now I can hear it. Yeah.
And you are now, but you don't too often for many years and decades even, you didn't hear too much about. Our country and its taxpayers have been ripped off.
Well, it's going to take him forever to get to the point.
But it is.
The point is, he's announcing the tariffs today, or is he announcing they're not?
Hold on here. Hold on. What'd you say?
Well, it'll take him forever to get to the point. My point is.
Yeah, he will.
Is he announcing the tariffs? What is he
doing? So it's reciprocal. That's what we wanted to know. What kind of tariffs? Reciprocal.
What does that mean?
Simple. Can't get any simpler than that.
What does that mean?
It's one of the most important days, in my opinion, in American history.
It's the most important day in American history.
Yeah, but what does he mean by reciprocal?
So, well, reciprocal is if you charge the United States 30% tariff on something, we charge them. If you charge the United States 250%, we charge you 250%. So it's tit for tat. Whatever somebody's charging us, we're going to charge them.
All right. So that's the big announcement?
Well, that's it. This is Liberation Day. Remember, he called it Liberation Day. To him, he said it's one of the most important days in American history. As he would say, never been anything like it. Never, ever, ever been anything like it in the history. Ever, 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 ever.
So what's the reaction? I mean, is it a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, we'll see what the market does, and we'll see what people think.
Well, the markets went up today.
They started out super. They started out like 400 down. Now it's up. But here's the thing. Bigger than, okay, on paper, in the long term, this is a good move. The question is, do Americans have the patience to go through like 2 years of real struggle? And I don't think Americans do, because he is not explaining it well. he's just putting it out there, and I think he could make it work if he would say, on a whiteboard, here's exactly how it's going to work, and it's going to take time. But
well, let me ask you this. What's the impact on the price of a Ford?
Well, according to what, you know, the prognosticators and the economists are saying, that a Ford might go up by 10%, $6,000.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard, I saw an analysis, and you may have seen this, where they analyzed where the parts come from. So if all the parts come in at some percentage tariff, and then the issue is what percentage of the parts represent the percentage of the whole car. And in most cases, the parts represent a very small percentage. So, yeah, I'd heard something lower than 10% on Ford. But I also saw all the other ones were on there too, General Motors, Lexus, et cetera. And some of these people, some of the foreign car manufacturers like Toyota and Lexus, they already make their cars here, and Hyundai. So the only thing they would pay tariffs on is the parts that come in from another country.
Yeah.
So I think the impact, if what you say is correct, and I believe it is, that it's about 10%, I would say people can live with that. I think if people think it's going to be 30%, that's not correct. But if the impact on, let's say, cars is a 10% increase, I think people will live with that if that helps create more jobs and put more of the manufacturing back in the United States.
Well, if it on fruit and vegetables, if I go to the store and next month for my apples and my cantaloupe, if it usually costs me, I buy a little thing of cantaloupe for $3.84, but all of a sudden it costs me $5 because of the tariff, then that's going to make my personal scenario impacted greatly.
Yeah, you won't be eating cantaloupe. But let me ask this, where do we bring cantaloupe in from?
Apparently, from what I've read, we have about 60% of our fruit comes from outside of America. I can't imagine they ship stuff in.
But where do we bring our cantaloupe in from?
Mexico has a big in South America and cantaloupe. So
we can grow cantaloupe here, can't we?
Well, sure we can. Yeah. But it takes migrant workers to do that.
Cantaloupe growers here are going to be tickled to death then, huh?
Yeah. The only other thing he's doing is I've heard him say it now twice now. Biden, 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 Biden. Biden is the past. If Trump wants to bring America forward, make America great again, as his words are, which he borrowed from Ronald Reagan, of course, not original, as he's borrowing the tariffs, he needs to forget about Biden. This whole trash-talking Biden just makes him look bad. Did you see anything about the...
I agree, and I think he is not going to change.
The Cory Booker 25 hours marathon speech.
I think that's a massive insulting the Congress. So not insulting, but shows just how bad Congress is to spend so much wasted time on speaking for 25 hours to try to do it. What do you call it?
They traditionally call it, if it's on a bill, they call it a filibuster to stop the bill. But this was not a filibuster because there was no bill. I think it's a unique choice, and we'll have to see what happens here, what unfolds, because Cory Booker, you know, ran for president once before, and he is somewhat of a centrist, semi-moderate. He's still Democrat. He still believes
in... Why would he speak for 25 hours? What was he trying to do?
Well, I think what he was trying to do, I mean, some of it was PR, and some of it was he felt inspired, but he wanted to say, this is what Donald Trump's doing to the country in the eyes of Democrats.
So it wasn't favorable, huh?
Well, from the excerpts I saw, of course, I didn't see all 25 hours, but he wasn't trash-talking. He was just saying, hey, this is not what most Americans want.
Yeah, I don't know what that means. I think that's one of the issues for me. They're not going to change. Democrats aren't going to change, and mainstream media is not going to change. It's just too general. I'll give you an example. The other day, I signed up. Oh, my gosh, I never sign up for these webinars. So I got this really neat email. Come on in. And we're going to give this really in-depth webinar on social media marketing. And I thought, well, It's against my better judgment. These people don't know very much, but I signed up, right?
Yeah.
Time came, I started to listen. I mean, God, it was horrible. I mean, it was so fundamental. They never gave one example of how going on social media would benefit your company in terms of income or decreasing expenses. All they just said was, hey, you know, it's social media. You got to be there. Oh, social media. It's important. You got to be there. It's important for your brand. People look, if you're not on social media, what will happen? Oh my gosh, your company will probably burn up in flames. You got to get on social media. And how do you get up on social media? Call us. We're a social media expert.
Yeah. And just give them $1,995 up for 90 days.
I just can't. I mean, it's just so horrible. And this one was sponsored by the SBA.
Oh, it was. Oh, interesting.
They asked me to rate it. And of course I did. I gave it a zero. I said, anybody that's listening to them would have to be somebody who's never actually been on Facebook because they were
Gene
kind of
Kleiner
complaining about Facebook. Pardon
now,
me.
Can you hear the voice of Gene Kleiner? Like in our last podcast, folks, if you tuned in, you want to go back and listen to it. Bob knew a famous Silicon Valley attorney, but Gene Kleiner said to you, Bob, you always go for the juggler.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a compliment, though.
Yeah.
It wasn't a negative point, right?
Yeah.
He didn't appreciate that as much as his partner, who always went for the jugular. That's what I've always said about this guy, Tom Perkins, who was the other partner in Kleiner Perkins. Perkins would always go all in. Never hesitate.
He was always gung-ho,
all
go
in.
For it.
Bet the farm. He had a couple of rules. He said, one, keep selling all the time. Whatever you have, keep selling it.
Yeah.
And he said, the other one is, don't be afraid to bet the farm. And he would do it. When I'd have something at a board meeting, he'd say, oh, fine, bet the whole company on it. And I'd say, well, Tom, if it fails, run a business. He'd say, so what?
Now, is this, when you were dealing with them, because you had a couple, three companies in Silicon Valley you were on the board of, were they board members of your companies? Did they invest in your companies? Or is this when you were doing venture capital or start helping businesses start up?
They were board members of my company for 7 years. They were major investors in my company, right? And then they were major helpers in getting other money. I mean, with Gene Kleiner, we flew out to Pennsylvania. A helicopter picked us up at the airport, took us over to the top of the Hillman building, went down to the 8th floor, met with Henry Hillman and raised money, and went, got back helicopter and went back home. What I mean is that's what Gene Kleiner can do for you. We flew out.
I have seen you do that for people, but that's a whole nother deal.
But
did they ever have any epic failures? Like you mentioned, Perkins was always gung-ho. Did they have any investment epic failures that they just
really... Well, yeah, they had some big failures. But, you know, in the year they invested in my company, they invested in 74 companies, 74.
And what percentage would you say made it? 20%?
Well, I don't, to put it another way, they made most of their money out of two companies. One was Tandem Computer, another was Genentech. And if you were to do some research on
Genentech?
Genentech, right.
Wow. And Tandem. I remember Tandem.
Anyway, both those companies, when the company went public, they each made $250 million each for Kleiner Perkins. So they walked away from those two companies with $500 million plus because the stock went up after that. But that was their two investments. Yeah. But yeah, they didn't make very much money on my company because when we sold, they didn't sell their part. The buyer bought my stock and bought my partner's stock, but didn't buy their stock.
Now let's go back. Let's see how long. Let's see if we can go 2 minutes without him mentioning Biden or Democrats. Hold on.
Well, maybe he can or can't. My other thing to talk about today is the new chatbots. I don't know if you're looking at the chatbots now, but I was on Marriott. Marriott, big successful company. He can't go 2 minutes, but let's go on to the what I call the big thing happening. So I'm on this chatbot, Marriott's chatbot. Now they got a lot of money, so they'd have a good chatbot. And their chatbot came on and said, my name is Sonny. Can I help you? And of course, then I'm chatting back, you know, with my keyboard going as fast as I can.
Now, wait a minute. Whose chatbot is this?
Marriott, M-A-R-R-I.
Oh, yeah, I love Marriott. I write about them in my book,
My
Shameless
favorite
Plug.
company. So, but they're
Shameless
going
Plug, Shameless
downhill.
Plug, one of five winsome companies.
I think you become so big that it becomes impossible to organize yourself. So I'm talking to their chatbot. Hey, my name is Sonny, and I'm here to help you. So what's your problem? So then they wouldn't let me tell them what their problem was. They made me select from their list of options. And of course, none of my problems were on the list. So after 41 minutes with chatbot, now listen to this closely.
Sonny, the chatbot for Marriott.
I'm on 41 minutes with Sonny. Finally, I said, Sonny, you're worthless. And it came back and said, would you like to talk to a real person? I said, sure. So now I'm talking to a real person, apparently a real person, as far as I know. But while I'm talking to this person, I thought, I'm going to have some fun. I'm going to call Marriott on the phone, customer service. So jump forward about 10 minutes later. I'm talking to Marriott on my phone, customer service person, and I'm talking to the chatbot person. Now
On your
listen to this.
computer, were you on your phone or your chatbot
My
iPad?
chatbot is on my computer.
Okay.
My phone is on my phone talking to Marriott. Now, here's the point. So I said to the Marriott person, the real person on my phone, I said, I'm trying to book a week in February in Phoenix. And they said, there's nothing available in February. I said, are you sure? Would you please check? She said, oh no, there's nothing available in February. And I said, well, I hate to tell you this, but I got your chatbot on my computer and they've just told me there's availability in February. And I said, let me read their answer to you. So I read their answer, my chatbot answer, to the Marriott person. They said, well, I don't know where they get that from. I said, well, I'm telling you, they're telling me, blah, blah, they got time availability. And I said, look, all I want you to do is very simply admit to me that your systems don't talk to each other and one of you is wrong. That's all I want you to do, right? Because
Yeah,
one of you has to
Bob,
be wrong, right?
you'd be nice to them.
So she said, oh, I can't tell you if we're wrong until you stop your communication with our chatbot. So I deleted my conversation with the chatbot. Now I'm on with this person. And I said, now can you tell me if they're wrong? She says, well, we work on different systems. They have a different system than I do. I said, so you're telling me you have different databases, and one database says you've got availability, the other database says you haven't. And
That's
that's where the
interesting.
conversation fell apart.
You just hit on a huge topic for banter in the future. Is our chatbots good? Do people like chatbots? We might have to do a survey, bring in a chatbot expert, because I'd like to know. I've been looking into chatbots, but I love Marriott. Just in all, just so everybody knows, I mean, I'm a huge Marriott fan. You had a bump there with them, but on page
Well, the
123,
bump
of
with
course.
Marriott, the
You
bump
are
with
in the book,
Marriott,
Bob. You're
yeah.
written about in The Winsome Way. Marriott's on page 123.
Marriotts are getting worse. And I can tell you that that's all customer service related things. And I could give you ex many, many different examples, but having spent, I have like $60,000 worth of timeshares at Marriotts, and the service over time gets worse every year. It's harder and harder to book your times. The cost to keep your Marriott in vogue so you can get your time goes up every year, right? So so they've got you coming and going. You're going to pay more money every year in operating costs, and yet it gets harder to book the time. And this year, for example, January, February, March, which is times for my Phoenix, they were all booked. And I said, well, if you're all booked and I can't book, then where did my money go? She said, well, I can't explain that.
Well, this, but you're mostly, we're focusing on, and the chatbot on timeshares, not necessarily everyday room.
Well, both chatbot and the customer service person was on timeshares,
Yeah.
but on Marriott timeshares.
Yes, on Marriott, yeah.
Marriott used to be the timeshare standard, the poster boy or poster girl. It was, and then it's totally now turned over to a, I wouldn't say it's a scam, But I'd say now the biggest business now in timeshares is helping people get out of their timeshare.
Well, there's ads for that all the time, isn't there?
Exactly.
I will save you money. You listen to...
And there, it's true, but you have to pay. But if you're starting to pay like I am, I'm not paying almost $5,000 a year for maintenance. Well, my gosh, if it's $5,000 today, maybe it's going to be $10,000 in 7 or 8 years.
But you get how much? So, 2 weeks?
Yeah, 2 weeks. So
2 weeks, that's not bad. $2,500 a week, that's not bad, Bob, for a Marriott property.
No,
you think about it.
Horrible.
What?
It's horrible. But and it goes up every year. And the point is, the owner can't control it. I can't control it. They just move the price up every year, and so it gets more expensive. It's actually cheaper now to get a hotel room sometimes than to actually use your timeshare. But the real point I'm driving at is that kind of a broader point is that everybody is running to these chatbots.
Yeah, that's just a good topic.
Chatbots aren't, go ahead.
We need to bring a chatbot expert. So, folks, if you listen to this banter, Bob and Dan, we want to banter about chatbots. I just used one this morning, had a very frustrating time, and I ended up, and you know me, I reasonably be patient and winsome. I ended up saying, I sent you the money. You said you credited me back the money. The money's not back in my account. Where is the money?
There you go. You just ditto. You just agreed with me.
Yeah. But for the most part, I've always had good luck. Like I use Marriott hotels exclusively, and their chatbots are always, at least for me, for the hotel side, lodging side, great. And
well, I've never used a chatbot on the hotel side. So the big issues for me this week are the run to chatbots, the fact that chatbots aren't very effective, and chatbots only work if you're working with the digital information. Like, do you have availability February 1st? Yes or no?
Yeah, now they don't get. They always say, "I don't understand that. I don't. I'm not able to answer your question."
So if you have a binary, it's kind of like texting. Texting really works if you're texting binary information, but some things require a discussion, and discussions don't work with chatbots far. Anyway, that's all I can say.
Hold on. Let's go back to the president here. He says he's explaining.
All right, let's hear it.
I think they're very smart at doing it. I blame the people that sat right in that Oval Office right over there, right behind the Resolute desk or whichever desk they chose.
He's blaming.
Charges 46% and much higher for certain items like cars.
Yeah.
Little items like cars. 46%, we're charging them 24%. India, very, very tough. Very, very tough. The prime minister just left. He's a great friend of mine, but I said, you're a friend of mine, but you're not be treating us right. They charge us 52%. You have to understand, we charge them almost nothing for years and years and decades. And it was only 7 years ago.
He should have done this 70 days ago, before the tariffs became so controversial. Timing is poor.
I don't understand what he's talking about.
The other countries, and they all understand we're going to have to go.
If people would understand early, up front and out front, he'd be a lot better off.
Japan, Shinzo Abe. He was a fantastic man. He was unfortunately taken from us, assassination. But I went to him and I said, Shinzo, we have to do something. It's not fair. He said, I know that. And he was a great gentleman. He was a fantastic man. But he understood immediately.
I should give special appreciation to News Nation for letting us play this in the background. Thank you, News Nation. Former WGN Chicago News Nation, home of Chris Cuomo, a great commentator at night. Fair guy.
So what's your take on Trump's tariffs?
Look at Cambodia. Listen to him. Look at Cambodia.
States of America, United Kingdom, 10%. And we'll go 10%. So we'll do the same thing. South Africa, 60%, 30%. And they've got some
My point is, as you and I have talked about this, we've bantered about this. What he's doing right now is he's explaining it where people can see black and white. Lots of times he just throws stuff out there, and then if somebody doesn't like it, he tells them that they're a lunatic or they're a loser or they're left wing. Or why not explain it up front and out front, proactive, tell them what, tell them why, and then he wins.
Well, I get it. His fundamental idea is if you charge us 10%, we charge you 10%. That's it. That's the fundamental idea of his plan.
Yeah, which is fine, but he should have explained it differently up front because he's got people, his approval ratings just dropped another 4 or 5%. If he gets down into the 30s, he's going to be in trouble. You know, we had elections yesterday. Florida, they retained the two seats. Trump had won by 30-plus percent, and the one candidate that was close was like a 12% margin. Wisconsin, you know, your buddy, your superhero, Elon Musk, gave away, did you see that? He gave away two checks for $1 million. Went there and gave two checks away to crowd, and he gave like $100 for anybody that would sign the petition. And the Democrat judge won the race there. So, and then now today, which kind of bothers me, now today Trump comes out and says, well, Elon's going to be, now that Elon has been kind of embarrassed in Wisconsin, now all of a sudden we're hearing Elon's going to be kind of pushed aside and he's going to be doing, he'll still be involved, but he's basically pushing Elon aside.
Remember, you and I have already predicted that Elon Musk is gone before the end of the year.
Well, yeah, I think I said July.
But Doge is not gone. That's the difference.
Right.
What I predicted is that Doge would become a actual department, and one of the senators, I hope Jim Jorgensen, would become in charge of it. So Doge
Jordan.
Would still exist, huh?
Jim Jordan.
Yeah, Jim Jordan. He would. So I think Doge gets carried on. He goes back and works on his cars, which I guess in a way that's what kind of buoyed up his stock today. People realize he's probably going to go back and run SpaceX and all the other companies, and he's going to make billions of dollars that way. But yeah, I think his job is done now, frankly. I think it's done now. He's basically given, what do you call it, like a yellow highlight pin to things that people have already always suspected. We've always suspected these things have been around, but we've never been able to prove it, right? And he's come out now and said, here's what we're finding. It's pretty true. We've got some problems. And he's one of his people also said the same thing I mentioned earlier about the Marriott. He says that one of the departments has got like 300 computer systems, computer systems that none of them talk to each other. They're all legacy computer systems from 30 and 40 years ago. So somebody's going to get a mega $1 billion contract to come in and make all those computers talk to each other and update them.
Why wouldn't there be? I mean, it's got to be under some department now. Is it under Commerce or Treasury? Or, well, there's got to be a CIO, the United States, Chief Information Officer, direct.
Because every department has their own stuff, and they're very much what I call pillar managed.
Yeah, silos. They're silos.
And I can see there's a reason for that. I can see that they wanted to keep the IRS separate from the FBI and the FBI separate from DOJ. I can see that. But there's ways to keep them separate without screwing up the database of information. That's the problem, right?
Yeah.
They don't share information. It's like the old DMV system. You could get a ticket in Colorado. You could get 10 tickets in Colorado, go to Kansas and break the law, and they didn't know you had 10 tickets in Colorado because their systems did not talk to each other.
Yeah, now there's a federal system for that.
Now that's starting to change. And I think we're now realizing the government is the same way. When the government gave the big veterans, it's actually the veterans contract to Cerner, which is worth billions of dollars. That's what it was. They had all these legacy computer systems that did not talk to each other, had different formats.
And I know you know people that work for Cerner. Do you have any, without naming names, and in confidentiality, have you ever heard any Cerner people think that the government is really mishandling this or that, or can you share?
Well, Cerner doesn't exist anymore. Cerner was bought by
Oracle. Oracle.
Right. So as far as what people say about Oracle, I mean, you can read it in the newspaper. I mean, most of the stuff you read will say these large government contracts are proceeding slowly, which I can understand because there's so many different approvals. Having worked for the federal government, not for, but with the federal government, getting approvals on EPA regulations, there's just many, many people who don't know very much to get a chance to sign off on things. So everything is naturally slower in the federal government. And I don't know that it's the problem of the government. It's a problem of size. You and I, even if we disagreed, could agree on something and get something done. Now we get another person in, we have another. Now, what if we get 14 million people? It's likely we wouldn't agree on anything.
Yeah.
So now it's the problem of size. Can, in fact, you have a government of 20 million workers and a mega-trillion-dollar budget, and can you have that in such a way that it seems simple to some guy like Musk? I don't know if it's possible.
So have you heard a number? Because I try to dig into that, because there's always all these numbers, you know. Everybody's saying they've already found $1 trillion. To the best of my knowledge, it's like 180 billion, less than 200 billion that they've actually found in savings.
Well, you know, the other thing about savings is that without a lot more information, we don't know if the savings are money that was going to be spent and not spent. If it was money that was approved, but not even really allocated. There's so many different definitions of savings. You know, it's like the old savings YouTube video, right? Hey, honey, I went out today and I bought a couch and I saved $400. Well, how much did you spend for the couch? I spent $1,600. But I took the $400 I saved and I bought an $800 table. It was also marked down $200. So I saved $600 today. My husband says, let me understand this. You've actually spent $3,800, but you saved $600. Where is the $600 that you saved? Well, I took that money and spent something else that was marked down.
Yes.
It's called magic shopping or something. That's what I mean about savings. I noticed when you see a press release, I saw one the other day that some group had found $100 billion and they're going to return it to the federal government. I thought the way they worded that, it's actually not an electronic transfer. It really is. The money was never there. They never really had the money, but it was allocated to them. So now they made the decision not to spend it. Therefore it's saved.
Yeah.
And that's what, so I'm saying is I don't know enough to know what they mean by savings, because it's a financial term that has to have very specific meanings. If my wife tells me she bought an $800 couch and saved $400 and then spent four and then saved the $400 she saved, she bought a cashmere sweater, I don't call that savings. I call that spending.
Yeah. Well, another thing that makes sense to me in all this is, and sometimes Elon and Donald just kind of blurt things. You know, Elon has proven he's kind of on the spectrum. It's part of the reason he's a genius is he's got maybe some autism, ADD. I can relate to ADD because you know where I live. I live on ADD Avenue.
Yeah, I don't think you're ADD, by the way.
But,
go ahead.
Well, but anyway, but he blurted out, and with the savings, we're going to give everybody $5,000 checks. And that's been spinning around on extreme channels. We're not going to, that's the stupidest thing. How can you say we're going to save money if you can turn around and put it out? That's not savings.
Well, that's another good point.
So here's the other point. Let me ask you this. You have this Social Security. This has been kicked around, and I've been saying this for, you know, I've gotten when I, it's funny as I've raised my income over the year. Now I think Social Security used to be if you made 60,000, they'd stop taking out the 8.8%. Then if you made 80,000, now it's up to I think 170,000.
Yeah,
is when they stop taking out Social Security. I guess somebody to explain to me why wouldn't we just take it to ad nauseum, and it would help fund Social Security. What say you, Bob Sherwood? So if you make 400,000 or 2 million, you're still having the same amount you made at dollar one.
Well, I mean, if Social Security essentially is a direct tax on income, which is what it is, it's a direct tax on income. And if it really is my money that they're keeping that I get back, then yeah, I'm in favor of it paying it until you start withdrawing it. But as we know that we don't really get back what we put in.
Well, I mean, I did it. I think my lifetime earnings, yours is probably more than that. You'd have to share, but you know, on the Social Security website, you can go what you made from the first time you had a Social Security and started making it teenagers till now. I think I've made $4.2 million. Does that make me a millionaire? And where did it all go? No.
Well,
But if I figure out over the years what I paid in, it wouldn't be 8 or 9% of 4 million.
look at it. There's another way to look at it too, and that is that if rather than pay in the Social Security percentage, right, you invested in any index fund, you'd make more money than if
Yes.
the government handled it. So
Yes, but I.
the concept of I'm in a way, Social Security is really an insult to American people, because really what started it was that we don't believe people can save for their own retirement. So we're going to force them to save. That was Social Security. Then we'll give them the money back.
And you know what? I think there is some wisdom and some merit to that because most. I don't say most people, but a good portion of Americans. For instance, you remember the first life insurance policy you bought? I bought, it was $21 a month. I was 22 years old. I thought, wow. And I got $250,000 life insurance. If I would have kept it, I would have stopped paying after 20 years and I'd had $250,000. But you're going to buy a house. People always find a reason to pull out of their 401k or pull out of their insurance.
I couldn't disagree with you more on principle. I believe principle, even principle, people are not good savers, but I also believe the government can't step in and help someone become a smarter person by forcing you to save for your retirement. I'd rather have you save for your retirement if you run out of money than you just have to go homeless. There's got to be some
Well, then who's
penalty.
going to take care? Then who's going to pay for that? The government
No, nobody. You just go
or
home. You live
churches?
on the streets. See, I don't. I'm against fundamentally. It's a situation where some other outside entity makes decisions for me about how I spend my money, as if I can't, as if I'm not knowledgeable enough to do it myself. And I'm against that, right?
Yeah, well, and then
That's
we disagree. We're
essentially
gonna have
what
to
Social
banter on
Security
that.
is.
It's banter time, folks. By the way, you're listening to banter. Perfect
Well,
example. Should we have Social Security? Shouldn't we? Way back when,
no.
web talk with Bob at Gmail. If you want to write us on this, if you're an expert in Social Security, have an opinion. Web talk with Bob at
Oh,
Gmail.
Social Security is designed to help the weak.
Well, I disagree. I think that there has to be with government, with leadership, whether it's a local village or it's
Well,
the.
let me ask this then. Why don't you just give them all your money and let them like pay for your housing and food? Just give them all your money.
Well, I think we give what the way it was designed is we give an appropriate amount. Now we're giving too much in
Well, you're
taxes
giving a number. I'm just
for
saying,
fire. What about roads? Should you have to build the road out in front of your house?
maybe. What I'm
And the
really
police,
saying
should
is
you
this,
just keep guns? Should you just protect yourself with guns
well,
and
I
fire
don't know about
extinguishers?
all those analogies. Right now, I'm talking about the Social Security. If in fact you believe that we need a somebody, a father to say, son, you need to save your money, and therefore, because you're not a good saver, we're going to take it from you. We're going to tax you from it. That's Social Security. No, I don't agree with that principle, right? And I believe that weak people want that because they're saying to themselves, you know, they're right. I can't really save, so I'll just pay into my Social Security. It'll take care of me the rest of my life. I don't know. Well, if that's the case, then I'm saying the principle there, if you follow it to the conclusion, is that wouldn't you be better off there than just giving the government all your money and let them take care of everything for you?
So
Then
it'd
you
be
have
like
to,
Russia.
Well, it's Mein Kampf. You
It's
know the book Mein Kampf, right?
I didn't read it. Have you read it?
Yeah,
Of
Mein
course
Kampf.
you have.
When I was at KU as a freshman, I was a member of what they call the SDS, the Students for Democratic Society. I was the KU representative to Wisconsin because we were against the John Birch Society. And to be a member of SDS, of course, many people thought we were communists. It's called Students for Democratic Society. The John Birch people were their conservatives, right? Right-wing conservatives. KU sent four people to the national meeting in Wisconsin, and I was one of them. I didn't know at that time that I was in the midst of a lot of Democrats. I just thought it was really a good idea, you know. Later, I realized it was Democrats because when I got there, I kind of liked the John Birch Society. But in any event, my real point is that part of what we had to do there was talk about Mein Kampf.
You're
So
gonna.
that's how I read the
So
book.
let's see. We got about 7, 8 minutes left. So can you give us the CliffsNotes version of Mein Kampf?
Sure. Give all your money to the government and let them take care of you the rest of your life. And they'll tell you where to work, where to job. They won't tell you how much you make because it's irrelevant. You doctors, lawyers, whatever. You give all your money to them and they take care of your housing, et cetera, for
It
all
would
your life.
now it, that would be an interesting study of what percentage of Americans would discipline themselves enough to save rather than having that safety net or assurance that the federal government has.
Oh, I think it's no more than 15 or 20%.
That would save.
I would,
So you're
WOULD, would.
saying 75 to 80% or 85% would not.
Yeah, they would say, no, we would rather have somebody else take the money and take care of us.
Yeah.
Because that's the easy way, you know? It's what I call massive. Mein Kampf is a massive entitlement program. By the way, another way to summarize Mein Kampf is give what you have and they give you what you need. So in other words, you don't really have a job where you can get ahead, right? You might get promoted in the party, but eventually you get housing, you get all your food, you don't have anything to worry about. You can play your soccer games, but the hierarchy always becomes the issue. In every situation, even the one I'm describing, there's some people at the top. You know, like the current conspiracy theory with Elon Musk and Peter Thiel and that group. That conspiracy theory is that there's a half a dozen billionaires, we'll call it the PayPal mafia, who basically want to have government run by private corporations. They think
Peter
private
Thiel
corporations
is a
do
big
a better job. Yeah,
J.D. Vance
we know that,
backer.
right? So that's what I mean. It's the old PayPal. And speaking of JD Vance, he's the target guy for TikTok. To me, that's the biggest thing going on next week, is that will TikTok in fact be sold?
We got to talk about that tomorrow in the next episode of Banter.
Yeah.
TikTok chatbots. You notice this? They're quick words. TikTok chatbot. TikTok chatbot.
The clock on TikTok is ticking because I believe the day, I want to say April the 5th.
I think so. Say that again fast. The clock on TikTok is ticking. The clock on TikTok is
Yeah.
ticking. Can you say that fast 3 times?
And then you've got people like Oracle, like a couple of big venture capital firms,
Yeah.
Blackstone, who has, you know, they have trillions of dollars,
And
Angel.
did you hear what Trump said? There's never
What?
been anything like it. He wants Oracle. He wants Larry Ellison to buy it and give it to half of it to the government, and so the government will guarantee it's successful, and then the government will get trillions of dollars of
Yeah,
profit.
makes total sense.
Bob.
The problem with it is that there's nothing wrong with that idea, but nothing wrong with it conceptually. Oracle, of course, they have to negotiate some deal, but Oracle runs all the servers now for TikTok.
Well, what they
But
could
there are
do, okay, and I see is the merit of it is that the Department of Commerce should start a separate division of economic development that has its own funding, like you did. You've done this, Kauffman Foundation. You've been in venture capital.
Yeah.
In fact, right now I'm declaring, folks, breaking news right here on Banter. I am announcing that Bob Sherwood should be the director, the DEDG, the Director of Economic Development Guru. And then things like that could go through you, and then we could help bring down the national debt.
Well, show me an economic development department, and I'll show you a department that runs on process.
Well, and here's a little trivia question, and this is going to make you mad because I like to kind of gig you a little bit. Name the one-time Shawnee City Councilman, Shawnee, Kansas, who initiated the movement to start the Economic Development Department in Shawnee.
Don't know. Probably you, but it's
that's right. We didn't have one. We didn't have one. I got 70,000 from the city, 70,000 from the chamber.
I knew the Economic Development Department of our neighboring state very well, and I got visits from them.
Yeah.
And they'd say, we're sending you some money to support what you're doing down here, but I want you to hire my cousin. So I'm sitting right across from him. He said, yeah, I want you to, you want to hire my cousin. I said, what does your cousin do? He said, well, he can fit in somewhere. I said, we don't need your cousin. Well, you don't get the money. I mean, economic development departments, to me, for the most part, are process oriented. They were out. I've been to so many economic development meetings where the whole deal was put your ideas on a sheet of yellow paper, a sticky paper, and put it up on the board. And we spend all day putting our ideas on the board.
That's right.
And I count them. So we got 20 ideas here. Then what happens? Everybody goes home. It's like
you gotta pick one.
Now they do some good things. We have one called the Mid-America Regional Council in our area.
Yes.
And their mission basically is to try to keep the different counties from fighting against each other. You know.
Keep the. I was on a couple of the boards or committees for Mark, and I'm going to tell you, it's really good because you go to these meetings. I'm a councilman, Shawnee. There's Liberty, Missouri, Summit, Missouri, but you got all the way different counties, and it does save money for purchasing power, and it does help people coordinate.
Yeah. Well, they try to keep, let's say, Overland Park from buying a company that lives in Leawood by giving a better tax credit, moved to Overland Park. And it protects people in, let's say, Jackson County from buying a business from Leawood. So that's one of the things they try and do, is to keep those individual cities from buying each other's companies by giving them better tax breaks. But then that's kind of like a waste of time, frankly. But the best thing they do.
No, I'm going to banter. This is for our listeners. Anybody that.
Let me finish.
Mark, Mid-America Regional Council is a great organization. A+.
Let me finish my point.
Okay.
The good thing companies like organizations like Mark do is they go outside. Let's say somebody wants to look for a place to put a big data center, and they'll promote the area for a data center. Now, the fact is all the data centers are going to other areas. Most of all the big companies that relocate go to other areas. I was asked by Mark to give a talk to, now I've gotten into TransUnion, but that's not the right name. In San Francisco, there's a tall building that goes up to a point.
Transamerica.
So Mark asked me to come down and give a talk to 400 Transamerica employees that were being moved to Kansas City. And they were worried. A lot of them didn't want to move. So my job was to tell them, you know, former Californian, now I'm a Kansas, that it was okay. Here's the reasons why. In fact, they gave me a big pyramid. Plastic pyramid, or I kind of
the tower,
something right that I have.
That tower used to be an iconic figure.
So I did that for Mark and a couple of times when they're moving people in. That's a good thing they do, right? But cities always compete. Olathe, I visited with the economic development part of Olathe years ago, and I told, here's to Olathe. I said, look, I'm going to move my company EDC in from Mountain View, California to Olathe, Kansas. And I said, we have 75 employees out there. I'm going to move in some and hire the rest here. And you know what the Economic Development Department told me from Olathe?
What'd they say?
They said, we don't want you. I said, well, why? They said, well, you're going to compete with Garmin. Oh, I said, my God, Garmin's got, at that time, they had, you know, a couple thousand employees. Said, we don't compete with Garmin at all. We're building pumps. We're building watches and how to find fish, you know? They said, well, that's beside the point. We think your labor costs will be high and you'll compete with Garmin. So we don't want you to move in here. That's
Interesting.
exactly what happened.
The president is finishing up here.
Yeah.
He's going to straighten out the U.S. One bill to straighten out the U.S. Now, here's one
Why
thing
don't you
that
bring this home? Summarize.
My two cents is he's long term. But what Trump also needs to add is exactly what you were just talking about. It ties in the segue. You went to Olathe and said, "What can you give me?" What Trump should
No,
do?
I never said that at all.
Well,
No,
or you said,
no.
"I'm thinking about it. How can we partner?"
I didn't ask you to give me. I didn't want anything from him.
What Trump should do is say,
Yeah.
if in the next 24 months you commit to break dirt, get everything going to build a manufacturing plant, I will give you X. Now, I don't know whether that's federal tax, whether that's FICA tax, but Trump should give incentives, not just say, I'm going to tariff the bad guys. What can we do for them? Because in the long run, if it brings jobs and economic stability and brings companies home, that's a good thing. But I don't see him doing that. There, he's about to sign it. So we're about to sign off. Donald Trump right there is about to sign something, and we're about to sign off. Folks, you've been listening to Banter with Bob and Dan, Bob Sherwood, Danny Snell. Always good. We'll see you tomorrow, and keep listening. If you got any great ideas or you want to be on the program, if you know something about chatbots or data centers or economic development, any areas we talked about today, webtalkwithbob@gmail.com. Webtalkwithbob@gmail.com. Be sure, we'd appreciate it if you like, subscribe, share this, forward it, share it with somebody. Say, listen to these two guys. They're just a couple of guys from the heartland, just talking about everything, and they're talking about nothing and stuff, and it's good stuff. Stay tuned. Thanks for listening.
All right. Thanks, Dan. Bye, guys and gals.